This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's been years since Iwo Perai last set foot in the Thamya village he once called home. The highland communities there made national headlines last year when they built several blockades to stop deforestation. Journey to Padi Raya, or Keraya Padi, is a film that follows Iwo's journey home for the Thamya celebration and the Samais and Thamyas he meets along the way. Joining me now is Nick Jasmine Hugh, a writer and co-director of the film, to discuss the issues being tackled in the film and her hopes for the film. Welcome, Jasmine. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming. So, I mean, maybe we can get to know you a bit better. Okay. Tell me about the work that you do.
Okay, besides this, well, this is actually our pet project. I am generally a writer. I also run a small record label, independent record label. And I'm also an educator.
Okay. Like in higher education?
Ooh, I used to teach in Sunway, teach screenwriting in Sunway, but that was ages ago. I am now running a program called Speak It. So basically, I teach children in Mua, mainly, English.
Okay, so you're based in Mua at the moment?
Half of the week I'm in Mua, yes.
You're one of those traveling souls, okay. And how did you get interested in filmmaking? When did that happen?
I'm a screenwriter, so, you know, I suppose it's part of me because I'm only one of the entire process, usually. Mm-hmm. But I sometimes also produce, I sometimes also direct, you know, not really heavy stuff, but yeah, I do all that. But doing documentaries on my own, this is like the only one that I have actually completed.
Is it Keraya Padi?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
okay, so yes. This is kind of like almost like your baby.
Yes. I suppose you can call it that. Yeah.
Okay, so the focus of this documentary is the Thamya community. What actually got you interested in their way of life? How did you first learn about this community?
The community, to me, it was only present because of this whole issue of deforestation, basically. Mm-hmm. We read a lot about the issues relating to them. And especially, I think, since 2012, when it was really, you know, starting to build up. And then up till last year, when it was really, really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that really, really basically affected me.
Mm. And why is deforestation something that, I mean, when did you kind of first get the idea that deforestation was happening? And, you know, why did it bother you?
Ooh. I grew up in the forest.
Oh, did you?
Yes. I grew up in Fraser's Hill.
Oh, wow. What a lovely growing up years those were.
Yes. So basically, the forest is actually close to me. Mm-hmm. So the concern about deforestation has always been there. I remember growing up, you know, going through KKB Road and Raup Road, going up to Fraser. See, you see all these lorries with all the logs, and used to make me think about, oh, okay, are these the trees that we see, you know, and stuff like that. So, yeah, I suppose it has always been there. The concern has always been there. Mm-hmm. And then when I was doing my master's, I was doing law, actually. But one of the subjects was WTO law. And decided to do my dissertation on WTO law to talk about deforestation and how WTO law could help deforestation. Yeah, but that was it. It was on paper.
And what were your findings from your dissertation?
Basically, it's hard because, you know, you have all these rules and regulations that supposedly could help, but in reality, it's not enforced, and it's difficult to enforce, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And Iwok, how did Iwok come into your life?
Ooh,
our protagonist.
Iwok is a very fascinating character. He ended up in my house one day because a friend of mine, who actually went on the journey with us to film this documentary, they were actually doing their final year project. Mm-hmm. And they were studying in Aswara, doing filmmaking. And it was, you know, one of those things that they needed a place to film their document. It was a short film. Yeah, to film their short film. And my house was available. And so they were there. And I met this guy, Iwok. And I just couldn't stop asking him questions because he was just that fascinating.
So, I mean, tell me about him. Like, you know, where's he from originally? I understand he's not actually a Thamya himself, but...
Yeah. So, he's not a Thamya. His origin is a very long story, but it's safe to say that he's actually from Sabah, and he's part of the Rungus tribe.
Okay. And what kind of... But he did call the Temiah village home once upon a time.
Yes.
And why was that?
He was actually there teaching. He's also an educator. He was there teaching the communities there to read and write and count and basic things. Yeah.
Okay. He spent a lot of time there?
Yes. He spent a few years there, actually. I actually don't know how many years exactly. Because the thing with Ewok is... And I think his mind works like a lot of them... You know, people who grew up in that condition where numbers is not a thing.
Okay.
Mm. Like when you ask them how old are they, it's not really a thing for them. Yeah. So yeah, I asked him, like, how long were you there? He was like, you know, there's no proper answer.
Okay.
Yeah.
But long enough for him to call it a home.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. And it's clear that it is his home because people treat him like family.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So he spent some time there. Then obviously he came off. And I guess when you were kind of plotting this documentary or planning this documentary, was it because he was already going back or was that just...
No, actually, well, when I was, I think it was sometime late 2016 when all this riot was going on.
The blockades.
Yeah, the blockade and stuff.
The violence against the Temiah community, yeah.
Yeah, when that was happening, I was very concerned. So I messaged him and waited because, okay, right now Ewok is actually living in the jungle, well, deep in the interior, in another community with the Semais.
Okay.
So he only checks or get to check his messages once in a while. So I waited for his answer and to see if he knows about it and, you know, what's going on, because I knew that, you know, he has some people there that he knew. So we started talking about it, and then he said he wants to do a documentary on it. I said, oh, I have thought about doing a documentary on it. And I said, why don't we do a documentary together? And then, yeah, we talked and talked and talked, and, you know, the communication was a bit slow because he's always inside.
Sure.
Yeah. And then it just so happens that one day he said that, I think I'm going to go back to the Temiah village, Kampung Jadir, for the Raya Padi celebration. Then he said, would you like to come? Then I was like, yeah. I said, okay, we can use this for the documentary. Then he said, yes, and it just happened.
Okay, and maybe for someone who's unfamiliar, what is the Raya Padi celebration?
Ooh, you know, when I went on that journey, I didn't even know what it was. All I knew is that it's something to basically show gratitude towards the harvest, basically, is that for the harvest. It's not a big celebration at all. It's really like Hari Raya where you invite people. It's like a big open house.
Okay, lovely.
So you makan. Mm-hmm. And it's all about makan. And when I got there, I learned that they eat a lot. As in, they eat when they harvest, after they harvest. They eat when they are about to harvest. And they also eat when they're planting.
Okay.
So, yeah. So the Raya Padi, the main Raya Padi is when everything's done. It's harvested.
Okay. And that is like a Thanksgiving sort of
celebration. Like Thanksgiving, yeah.
Okay. And so tell me about that journey that when you started off to Kelantan, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
How did you plot out your journey and, you know, what were the stops that you made?
Oh, okay. So basically, three of us from KL. My friend Jeffrey, who was doing the audio. So this is a very independent project. So I got my friends together to actually come do this. Force them, literally. And I got another friend who was doing the camera. So three of us went to where Ewok is. So he's now running a school in a Semai village, which is also part of the documentary because Ewok's the protagonist and we have to establish where he is. And this is a very interesting school because it is the only community school within the interior right now who's running quite well, I think. Yeah. So, in fact, they have been approached by different people to actually help set up in other places.
Oh, to emulate what they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Ewok's one of the founders of the school.
Amazing.
So, but it's a community project. So they run on the basis of gifts from people. So if, you know, companies who they had somebody donating money for solar panels. So they got stuff like that, you know, to run the school. They've got regular people or companies who give them money to run monthly projects and stuff like that. So it's just a community school for kids who are there because they don't want to go to the government schools because either it's too far or they can't cope.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where exactly is the Semai community?
So the Semai community is in a place called Kampung Tual. It's in the interiors of Raup, Pahang.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
it's about 3 hours away.
Okay, so you kind of made your way to Pahang first?
Yes.
And then from Pahang. So did you kind of meet the Semai community as well?
Yes, yes. Okay. Yes, we did.
What did you learn about them?
Ooh. Actually, it was so beautifully set up, the whole entire journey for the documentary. It's like somebody else was directing it. it was really nice. Because when we set out to do this documentary, we decided to actually take an approach where we are not going to do it like how we used to do it on TV, mm-hmm. where it's all stressful. We were going to take it easy and let things, you know, unfold and just document it. So it was beautifully unfolded for us, I suppose. When we got there, we met the children. We also met the Tok Batin.
Mm-hmm, wow.
Yeah, and the Tok Hala. The medicine man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got to speak to them just out of the blue because they turn up not to speak to us, but they turn up to get Ewok to fill in a form. So but that's his role there in that community. He really fulfills what the community there needs. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I'm speaking today to Nick Jasmine Hugh. She's a film director and a writer, and she co-directed Karaya Padi, Jenny to Raya Padi, which was just screened at the recently concluded Freedom Film Festival, which was held in KL. But you know, Freedom Film Festival will be traveling to other states, so we'll find out a bit more after this quick break. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today is writer and film director Nick Jasmine Hugh. She co-directed the film Journey to Raya Padi, or Karaya Padi, which chronicles the journey of Ewok Perai, the protagonist, and his journey to the Temiah village. And we kind of, I guess, get to know about the Temiah village through this documentary as well. So, I mean, in this whole process, so you met the Semai community in Pahang, then you moved up to Kelantan.
Yep.
How was it getting into Kelantan? Because I remember reading a lot of, filmmakers and a lot of the activists, they were actually barred from going into meeting the Temiah community because of the blockades that were happening last year.
Mm. Somehow we found our journey quite easy, except for the fact that we thought that we had to cancel it because the jeep that was supposed to come pick us up was stuck due to the slippery surface of the road because it was raining at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we also found out at the time that somebody else got arrested or got caught, mm-hmm. from going into the place the day before. So we had all these concerns, but for some reason it was easy for us. And we actually travelled there really late, not on purpose. And we ended up arriving at about 3 a.m.
Okay. And then the jeep came and got you a bit later than that.
Well, yeah, the jeep that was supposed to pick us up, we arrived in Gumusang about 5 o'clock. But we were picked up at 9 p.m.
So it's just the three of you. You, Ewok, and your friend Jeffrey, if I'm not mistaken.
Ewok, Jeffrey, and another friend who doesn't want to be named.
Sure.
And
no
me, yeah.
Okay, all right. So, okay, so once you went into the village, I mean, I think this was back in 2016, right? When you, this was just after.
This was, the journey was actually in March 2017.
Oh, so it was this year. Yeah. Okay. So how, I mean, they've been going through so many things, you know, they had been arrested, their blockades had been, like, you know, dismantled, they were facing aggression from the police and from, you know, forestry. How were they taking all of that? You know, what was your first impression of them?
The thing is, they are, what they told me, well, from what I gathered, mm-hmm. the blockade was supposed to be a message. And as long as the message was received, mm-hmm. They're happy and they want the, you know, authorities to do something about it and for people outside to know about it and react towards it. So that was the main purpose of the blockade. Mm-hmm. That's what I gathered. Yeah.
Okay, because I remember back in 2012 when the first blockades came out, we actually spoke to Lim Teck Win, and he was saying how they just didn't like the fact that they were not even being consulted. You know, they were just trying to get a meeting with the, you know, with the officials involved, and even that was just being denied to them. So this was just the only way that they knew how to act.
Yep. I think it's not black and white, the issue, because I also hear things like the representation that they have in government is not by choice.
Yes.
So they have their own community leaders who they elect or who they feel are their batins. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the ones who are signing papers are not those who they elected. So it's also an internal problem. The Semai village, for example, that we went to and the Tok Batin there that we spoke to, he made it clear that, you know, in their community, things are going quite fine because they are quite united in voice.
Okay.
Yeah. So they have an agreement between them that, you know, you shouldn't let anyone come and get stuff from our forest kind of thing. And if anyone turns up, the Tok Batin should know about it and it should be discussed.
And I think more importantly, I guess they've got the right representation to the government. The person that they actually want is in that position.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So when how long did you spend there? I mean, how long were you there to observe Tamiya
community? Actually, it was only 4 days. Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. It was 4 days, and it was hard because when we found out there was no toilet, my friend Jeffrey. Oh. He was not happy.
I don't think he'll appreciate you telling us that, but never mind.
He was not happy.
Okay.
And it's hard. You know, life there is hard. That's the other thing that we want to highlight. It's not just about the deforestation. It's also about how we are already, 60 years into Merdeka? Yeah, 60 years.
Yeah,
how
exactly.
Can I forget it?
We just celebrated it.
Yeah. And yet, you know, they are still like that. It's not that, you know, they need to change or anything. But if you introduce modernity, you have to somehow provide more. Mm-hmm. You can't just
throw them into
I tell you a story. Okay, this one really affected me actually, because there's no electricity up there. All along the way, there were electricity poles that were not working.
Okay.
And it's like, okay, somebody had spent money building these poles, putting them up, but then there's no electricity. What's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, there are things like that. And then there's a whole water pump thing that was going on. Somebody had given money to build this thing, but it was halfway done and it was not working at the end of it.
Right.
Things like that. So, you know, there are efforts.
But follow through.
There's no follow through, and it's hard to actually see that.
And I guess we wonder if they were even consulted about these things that were at the Tamiya community. I mean, if they were even consulted and told that these, you know, projects were coming their way, and, you know, whether they had a right to sort of question what happened or whether they had the right representation, like you mentioned. They don't even agree with that, right?
Mm. So for those, you know, personally, I don't know whether mm-hmm. they were consulted or not, but... Mm-hmm. When they were talking about this stuff, they were basically not happy.
Of course.
Basically, the place where we stayed at, the house that we stayed at, which is the Tok Batin of Kampung Jadir, his house is like, say, I'm really bad in like calculating distance. But I can tell you this, I went down to have like a wash, right? Thinking that, okay, go have a wash. So I started walking and I went down there, going downhill because the water source was downhill. So I was walking down. It seemed far, but it was fine. So I had a wash. But by the time I got up to the house, I was covered in sweat. I was thinking, what's the point of this? So in the end, I took less wash and like just, make do.
And what were your observations of the area around you? I mean, just looking at the deforestation that was happening. I mean, did you see that for yourself?
We saw some parts that were basically, you know, touched. Mm-hmm. But there was still, around the area where the house is, the kampung, you can still see quite a lot of forest. Mm-hmm. But during the floods in 2014, they were all affected.
I see.
Yeah, they were all affected. Even the ones that were living on the highland. You think that, you know, you're up there, but they were still affected by it because of the landslides and even floods up there.
And I understand, you know, that the river water is also affected by all the mud and all the silt and all that sorts of things. Did you also see that happening?
The water that they have is a bit murky, mm-hmm. but not as bad as the one that I saw on, like, videos online. Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. Slightly murky. I'm not sure whether it was because they were higher up, but it's not completely clear.
And I mean, maybe for someone who's not familiar, how exactly is their life connected to the land that they're living on?
Ooh, it's their everything. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think Orang Asli will be Orang Asli without the land.
Right.
So, and it's a shame that, okay, we are 60 years after Merdeka, literally what, 50 years, I think in 1961, that's when the government took a policy to actually want to integrate the Orang Asli into the wider community, mm-hmm. 1961. If I'm not mistaken, it was 1961. But 50 years on, well, nearly 50 years, we're still nowhere. We still don't understand that their life relies on the land. And it's a shame that we don't understand that the land is, you know, that important to them.
Yeah, and that they're not being consulted, you know, when licenses are given to logging companies. Because, yeah. I mean, we all understand that logging is a source of, you know, income for the state government. So obviously, yes, we can't say no to logging completely, but surely you need to consult with the people who are going to be affected by your activities.
I personally think that it's such a poor excuse to say that logging is their only economic source.
Well, they don't say only, but they say one of the highest yielding, I suppose. Yeah.
But it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be, especially from a government that actually upholds those principles that they say are Islamic. I don't know. Yeah, it shouldn't be, because, you know, you cannot take natural resources. Mm-hmm. And it's not yours to take, actually. It's not.
Well, they would argue it is, but so I guess then it's safe to say that the Orang community, the Orang Asli, they place, you know, very high value on the land and the environment, and they just take what they need, I'm guessing. And
yes, they have their own beliefs where they respect, you know, they can only take what they can take. Mm-hmm. There are certain trees that they would cut and certain trees they won't. Because I actually asked, what's the difference between you cutting down these trees and, you know, people outside? And then they say, we know which tree to cut.
Okay.
Yeah. This is not just with the Temiya, this is also with the Semais, yeah.
So what was your kind of, I guess, impression again of, you know, what you saw during those 4 days? I mean, have they been badly affected by the deforestation?
Right now, to say that it really, really completely affect them, that their whole life has changed, yes and no. There are people who had to move because of deforestation.
Right.
Of course, you know, with the logging, their food source and all that, you know, depleted and stuff like that. They are affected, but they are surviving.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But all the same, there isn't. I mean, imagine if we had to move because suddenly some.
Yes. Yes.
Know, there would be an outbreak.
Landslide coming your way, and you got to run for it.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
And their only water source, which is the river water, is murky and dirty. I mean, how are they supposed to have, you know, potable water and things like that? So, I mean, talk me through Ewok's role in all of this. So we forgot about our protagonist here.
Yes.
So when he arrived, I mean, this was like a homecoming for him almost.
Yes, in a way. But the thing about the Temiyas that I noticed, they are not as affectionate as the Semais. Mm-hmm. See, the thing is, from the outside, we always group them all up together.
Yeah,
you know. But there are 18 suku kaum, and all 18, I'm sure, are different. I've not met all 18, but yeah. But they're different. Uh-huh. So I can see that the Semais are actually quite a loving bunch because they like hugging and touching for some reason.
Okay.
And the Temiyas seem to be like, oh, yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah.
So Ewok returned because he was invited? Or
He's not been back for 5 years.
Okay.
So the people there kind of adopted him. He's like part of the family.
Because of his teaching there?
Yes, because of his teaching there. And he used to live with them, see?
Right.
Yeah. So it was homecoming. And when I asked the Tok Batin, who is like his godfather there, you know, do you miss him? How long have you not seen him? So he's like, he's gone and found work somewhere else. So it's really sweet, actually.
So, I mean, was he happy to be back? You know, what kind of happened when he arrived?
He is in his element. He was really, really happy because I suppose he was not back there for a long time. Mm-hmm. And he's not been back there since 2014. Mm-hmm. When the flood happened. So he was really curious to see what was going on up there.
Yeah.
So the old kampung where he used to live in have shifted to this new place. So this new place that that we were at was not the one that he lived in.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. And was he, I mean, was he shocked at, you know, the rate of, you know, the deforestation happening, the pollution that he saw?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So we went to like a really, well, before it was supposed to be like a really nice big river, but it was not by the time we got there.
Yeah.
And to get there, we actually had to cross like it's like a wreckage in the road. So I don't know what actually happened. So it was supposed to be a road, but then it was just probably a landslide or something. So we had to climb down and climb back up just to get to this river. Yeah.
And this is all coming from, I guess, from the logging, right? Because it's affecting the water flow. It's affecting so many other things. How did it make Ewok feel to see all of that?
Oh, he was very angry, actually.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, very angry and sad. But that's the thing. I think with him, he only does what he can, and he's not an aggressive person, so he doesn't. Not that I've seen lah so far, so he doesn't really. Yeah, but when he saw his students were arrested on a video, while he was out of the village, once he quickly rushed to Gomusang, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, to follow and to see, you know, what was happening. And to lend support, I suppose. Yeah.
Okay. And did you make any surprising discoveries while you were filming this documentary?
Yes. You see, I travel a lot. I go up and down Malaysia like nobody's business, in my car, driving everywhere. I've been to every state. But after this entire journey, I really felt like I've been ignorant and like I didn't know Malaysia. Mm-hmm. Like we, from the outside, only know half of Malaysia. And they have an existence that we completely ignore. Because now it seems like my whole world has changed. My whole, I don't know, when I think about Malaysia, it's just different because I see it as a whole, I suppose. But yeah, it really hit me that I was ignorant by the end of the journey.
About what's happening in our...
About them. Mm-hmm. It's not even about... Okay, I know about what's happening as in terms of illegal logging and stuff like that, but I didn't know them.
Right. Yeah, the direct, I suppose, effects on the people who are closest to the things that these are happening to, right? I mean, we always talk about things like water security, oh, it's going to affect us in the city one day, but we never, I guess, take into consideration the people who are living there who are like you said, the floods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their daily activities are affected by these things.
What they were trying to do with the blockade was actually to stop something greater from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, it started from 2012.
Yeah.
And then look, 2014 happened.
Yeah.
And that was a big thing.
That was terrible.
And yet we didn't do anything about it. We're not even stopping it, you know. Okay, maybe it made the protests in 2016 louder and more noticeable, but then we're still not doing anything about it because people are still logging there today.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the answer is to the whole situation, but it's really, really, really a huge problem that not just that community is facing, but everywhere else, you know, Sabah, Sarawak, everywhere.
And I guess, you know, what do you hope this documentary will achieve? I mean, what do you hope the message... Because like you said, it was a very... you just let things happen, right?
Yeah.
Around you.
Yeah.
So what are your kind of hopes for the documentary?
I hope it makes people feel like me. As in, like, we need to know more. Yeah. To actually know more and perhaps help whatever way we can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's really not much that they want from us that they don't already have, really, except for perhaps, you know, some assistance in building some facilities, whatever. But in terms of their lifestyle and reliance on the earth and all that, they're sorted. You know, if they want food, it's in the jungle. They don't need, you know, and they're planting their own food and stuff like that. They've got a supermarket, and they've got a bank, which is also the forest. They've got everything they need there except for certain things that we have introduced to them. Modernity. So we've introduced to them toilets, we've introduced to them television, we've introduced to them all these things, right?
Mobile phones, I'm sure.
Mobile phones, oh my God. So mobile phones is a funny one because the Tok Batin said that, you know, back then, when this is the Tok Batin in the Semai communities, back when they were being trained by their parents, they had to go into the jungle and listen to the forest, basically. But he was complaining about how to teach the kids today when they have their headphones on.
goodness, so, first world problems so, coming into the jungle.
Yeah, so I think we cannot stop the evolution that's going on. And, you know, if we can, we can assist in this change that they're facing. But we cannot take away their livelihood, which is the forest. Because that's all they have to hold on to their
way of life.
Yeah, their way of life. And, yeah, their way of life, basically, yeah.
What was the whole filmmaking process like, you know, post-production and everything? How long did it take you to complete everything?
Basically, we went to film in March. And then I left it for a while. I left it for a while and started looking at it again, I don't know, probably in May. So this is the first time I'm editing. Okay, usually I edit my own music videos for the record label. But only, you know, offline editing. And I would get my friend Zadi, who's an expert, to actually do the online. But this is the first time that I literally completed everything, like the editing, on my own.
Wow.
Yeah. And I couldn't even like consult Ewok about the story or anything like that, because he's been inside the jungle and I've not been there. And yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I showed him what it was, and he when was that? That was like 2 weeks ago, because I went there. And it was supposed to be a one-off documentary, but now I've decided that it's actually a feature-length documentary, because we are continuously now filming to actually tell more, because there are more to be told, basically.
Is Ewok still the protagonist in this, all of this?
Yes, Ewok is the protagonist, but, you know, he loves it, lah. He loves telling stories, but his stories jump from one thing to another.
Okay.
But he's also, he's good at it. He's good at telling us what it's all about.
Is he trying to, I don't know, after what he saw, going back to the community after 5 years, is he working in any way maybe to try and help, I suppose, or to do some activism?
I think he kind of knows, that, because his role is as an educator, you know, there is done.
Mm-hmm.
If he had time, he would love to go and help build a school there, because there was actually an invitation for him to go and help build a school there. But with what he's doing now in the Semai community, he just doesn't have the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he doesn't even have time for himself, you know, like he's completed his diploma, degree, master's, and like what's next, you know, he's just there.
Okay, well, he's, you know, making good use of all that education he got, I guess. I mean, if any of us wanted to see this film, I mean, we've missed the Freedom Film Festival screening, unfortunately, but how can we get our hands on it?
Okay, right now, because we're still continuously doing it, so at the end of the day, there will be a feature-length film, hopefully, and that probably will have its own screening.
Okay.
Yeah, but right now, Raya Padi, Journey to Raya Padi, will still be with the FFF. There are two places that will screen it. One is in Moa, in a Lota Cafe in Moa, and the other one is in JB, and I forgot, it's a college.
Okay, but basically it'll be in Moa and Johor.
Yes, in JB it's a college.
I guess, are you planning on having more screenings maybe in the Klang Valley for anyone who might be interested?
I think for the meantime I'll continue to work on the documentary, and then when it's done, the feature length one is done, that's when we will have a screening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing with this documentary is we think that it's important for Malaysians to watch, but it also relates to, you know, Aboriginal issues everywhere.
Land
so
rights, yeah.
Yeah, land rights, and it's not just land rights. Because the documentary is not just about land rights. It's about orang asli, basically, in general.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not sure whether it will be one of those that will travel outside. So I haven't actually, you know, decided on what to do with that feature-length documentary when it's done.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I hope it gets screened a lot, and I hope it does make it to the international circles as well, because I think it's an important story that needs to be told. I guess we can go to freedomfilm.my to find out more about the film as well.
Yes,
and
yes.
There should be some trailers there and things like that,
yes,
right? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay, thank you so much, Jasmine, for joining me today.
Yes, thank you very much for having us.
I've been speaking to Nick Jasmine Hugh. She's a film director and a writer, and she co-directed the film Ke Raya Padi, or Journey to Raya Padi, which kind of follows the protagonist Ewok Perai as he goes and visits the Temiah village that he once called home. If you'd like to find out more, you can visit freedomfilm.my. Unfortunately, we missed the Klang Valley screening, but I'm quite sure that they will have more screenings sometime in the future. So just keep an eye out for that. You've been listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.